Hello and welcome to the AmBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. Every 2 weeks, experts from AmBOSS, the medical education platform, interview medical students and healthcare professionals to showcase international perspectives on everything in medical school and beyond the textbook. Hello, and welcome to the AmBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. Today, we're doing a two-part interview. I'm Dr. Tanner Schrenk, and this is Sophie Neal.
And today, we'll be continuing with our mini-series, Leading Women in Healthcare, and the incredibly important topic of global health. I'd like to give a really warm welcome to today's special guest, Dr. Claire Wagner, a dynamic leader in global healthcare strategy, whose work has spanned continents, from providing global access to oncology for low- and middle-income countries, to playing a pivotal role in expanding the World Health Organization's essential medicines list for cancer. She's been the recipient of the Commonwealth Institute's 2021 Extraordinary Women Advancing Healthcare Award and is currently head of corporate strategy at the Bill and Melinda Gates Medical Research Institute. Claire, thank you so much for joining us today and giving us your time. And perhaps you could start by telling us a bit more about yourself.
Thank you, Sophie. What a kind and generous introduction, and just delighted to be here with you and have the chance to be part of the podcast. So as you mentioned, I'm head of corporate strategy at the Bill and Melinda Gates Medical Research Institute and came to this role through a journey through global health that started off in West Africa, then led to East Africa, and then eventually led back to the U.S., where I went to medical school and business school. I will also mention at the outset that I was a frequent user of AmBOSS and relied on this for a lot of test preparation. And as all of your listeners know, there's no shortage of examinations in medical school, and really, truly did end up using it as an incredibly powerful resource. So thank you for all you've given to us trainees along the way, too. And I'm happy to be paying it forward here on your podcast. So I'm a physician by training, and as far as career focus, my trajectory really tracks to access to pharmaceutical products and health services in low and middle income countries. I came to medicine through this route. I started initially pretty downstream in healthcare delivery systems, primarily in Rwanda, and then moved further and further upstream to access to products and services, for example, with the World Health Organization and its affiliates, and then further upstream to where I am now, which is really looking at how do you bake in access considerations to pharmaceutical product development? So excited to be with you all here today and look forward to the dialogue. Thanks.
Amazing. Well, I'm so happy to hear that you were able to benefit from AmBOSS during your medical studies and that you enjoyed using it. That's so great. And you mentioned that you were in Rwanda. So between, I think, was it 2007 and 2013, you were working in Africa. And I wanted to ask, how does it feel being back in the US? As you said, you've been on quite a journey. So after being in the field for so many years, what's it like to be back?
It's a great question. I think about what my boss in Rwanda would say, and the former Minister of Health, Dr. Agnes Binagwaho, and she would say, global health starts where you put your feet. And I think it's another way to look at it and say that the field is where you put your feet, and the way that you can engage and contribute doesn't necessarily map to geographies. For me, it meant working in Rwanda primarily, and that was the opportunity of a lifetime. And I also have close colleagues who do incredibly impactful public health work right here in Boston, where the disparity in life expectancy between Back Bay and Roxbury, I think, is something like 20 years. And it's just kind of striking. We're right in our backyard here, wherever one's backyard is, that we have such disparities in public health. And so for me, moving back, there were a lot of sort of considerations that required some transitioning on both, you know, moving to a place that wasn't as familiar to me to moving back to a place that was familiar to me. But I do think that there's really important lessons to draw on from that kind of approach to global health. You can have impact wherever you are.
That's a really great point. It's where you put your feet, and those problems are all over. That's why it's called global health. You know, maybe you could share with us some of the unique challenges that you felt you faced specifically in Rwanda when you were focusing on public health issues.
Yes, sure. So I learned so much from my time in Rwanda. Actually, some of my colleagues used to say that every day working with Dr. Binagwaho was like getting a master's degree, and I would agree with that. my role there was to support the documentation efforts of the Ministry of Health in terms of disseminating and analyzing public health data and how the country had achieved the results it had achieved in terms of its reduction in morbidity and mortality and its incredible progress in control of infectious diseases, for example. When I was thinking about this question and what would be most helpful to share for this audience, I think that the learning that I feel may be most relevant or one that I'll pick out is that is a really important core lesson around how to question the status quo. And knowing that when you do make big changes in any setting, actually, there's going to be resistance. And that I think spans from no matter whether you're the Minister of Health of Rwanda or whether you are an administrator of a department of nephrology in Boston or whatever your role is, or a pharmaceutical executive, you know, doing something new and doing something hard is going to push boundaries, right? And so that was one of the threads that cross-cut all of the work that I had the opportunity to contribute to and observe while I was in Rwanda. I'll just give a couple examples. So one was a large multi-stakeholder effort called the Human Resources for Health Program. And that was really an effort that brought in public sector entities from the U.S. government, from academia, and the Rwandan Ministry of Health to create new medical training programs in the country and to use money that traditionally had gone towards HIV/AIDS funding to do that. And not just for HIV, but it did draw funds from places that traditionally were dispersing funds for HIV programs. And to do that required not only masterful negotiation, but also a kind of persistence that the global health architecture did need to be changed to do that. And there was significant resistance that was met. And watching my boss and watching others in partnership across those different entities do their internal advocacy and external advocacy to make that happen was truly remarkable. Another good example is the HPV vaccine introduction, which took place in Rwanda about 12 years ago. And that was another monumental effort that took place. And I think, you know, the resistance that was faced there was really around, well, why are you doing this vaccine when you still have malaria in your country or you still have TB in your country? And maybe you should just do a pilot program to prove that it works in this country. And the minister would say, sure, somebody could do a pilot, but in Rwanda, pilots are only in the sky. And so if we're going to do this thing that we know works to prevent cervical cancer, let's do it nationwide. And so they did, and they became the first country to achieve nationwide rollout in the low and middle income setting and have since had, I think, above 90% coverage every year since. And so I think sometimes the hardest part of challenging the status quo is actually, for some, it's like opening that aperture and really thinking big. And leaders like the Minister of Health, Dr. Binagwaho, who is somebody who's constantly thinking big. You know, of course, these come naturally to her, but I think it does require a willingness to meet that resistance and to continue to push for hard things and push for what you know to be right. And so those are some of the challenges that were faced among a zillion others, but ones that I was close to and observed and learned a lot from.
Yeah, wow. I can't imagine how much work that would have been and also how much you got to learn from it as well. What an incredible and very difficult thing to be part of, but absolutely amazing. To take you back to the US, what would you say some of the challenges you currently are facing in your role at the moment?
Well, maybe I'll just start out by giving a little bit of a background on our organization and share with your listeners who we are and what we do. So at the Bill and Melinda Gates Medical Research Institute, we are a nonprofit organization dedicated to the development and effective use of new biomedical interventions to address big global health problems where investment incentives are limited. So what does that actually mean? So if you think about kind of a Venn diagram, like where are the huge public health burdens that have also historically been under-addressed? And so this means diseases like tuberculosis and malaria and enteric diseases and maternal and newborn and child health. And it's not that there isn't a lot of funding and a lot of people working on these issues, right? It's just that they've historically and maybe comparatively, we haven't met the public health need yet, and there's still quite a bit of work to do. And so that's where we find our kind of comparative advantage, if you will. We're based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and we are an affiliate of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is based out in Seattle. We ourselves at the Gates MRI work through collaborating partners and organizations to drive and coordinate the full spectrum of biopharmaceutical development activities from discovery all the way through license and registration. And so for some of our products, we go from the preclinical stages all the way through global regulatory approvals. And for others, we take them in at a bit later stage and, for example, do a phase two and a phase three and so forth. We're a pretty young organization. We're only about 5.5 years old. So our portfolio is quite large for our size. We are about just over 160 people, and we have a portfolio that spans products that are in preclinical development as well as later stage development, phase two, phase three. And our vision for the Institute is to drive change that is both meaningful and enduring. So not just developing the new therapeutics and vaccines, but also making sure that those therapeutics and vaccines are set up to be accessible and available and affordable for the parts of the world where the burden is the highest. And that's where the work that I get to do comes in. I head up our access strategy. And in global health, what does that mean? Well, something pretty similar to the commercial landscape, except with the lens of there's no world where we should be working on a product that is intended for a market that can't afford it, right? And so we have to bake in all of these considerations to the work that we're doing that spans from our more technical side of our organization in chemistry manufacturing controls to our regulatory team, to our clinical development team. And so market access, meaning those activities that impact a product's availability and future access in the marketplace for which it's intended. And those activities go from, as I mentioned, sort of regulatory technical aspects, but also prioritization with multilateral stakeholders like World Health Organization, like Gavi Alliance, like the Global Fund. It also means financing considerations. So what are the tools and instruments from an innovative financing perspective that will set this product up to be able to enter the marketplaces for which it's intended? How do you think about demand generation? How do you think about procurement and distribution? How do you think about launch and delivery, post-market surveillance? Now, we won't ourselves be responsible for all of these different aspects because we will be working with our commercial and our philanthropic partners to do that. But we do see it as our responsibility to make sure that the product is set up for success. And so to work with those partners effectively and efficiently to, as my boss in Rwanda would say, make sure the products don't end up gathering dust in the cupboard. You know, these are really intended to be out there in the world. And it takes a lot of work to make that happen and a lot of really strong partnership to make that happen.
Yeah. When you talk about it, I just can't even imagine the amount of work that goes into everything that you do. I think it's absolutely incredible.
It certainly requires a team effort and a team approach. Yeah. And you also asked about challenges. And just to make a couple notes on that, from a corporate perspective, some of our biggest challenges relate to just the sheer magnitude of the effort that it is that we're undertaking. So, for example, bringing together all of the different stakeholders around the table to focus on this single program. So, for example, our M72-ASO1 TB vaccine program, which is a adult and adolescent TB vaccine for the prevention of pulmonary disease. So this is for the quarter of the world's population that is latently infected with TB to prevent conversion to active TB. And this is the planned phase three study that we're going to be running in collaboration with our partners at GSK and others. 26,000 participant study, 7 countries, over 50 sites, PIs from all of these sites, with a lot of engagement from different public sector entities, our philanthropic partners, and so forth. That kind of team effort is absolutely vital to the program's success, and as well as making sure that we are engaging with the broader global audience and global stakeholders to socialize expectations. These are really long-range efforts that we're working on. They're going to take years and years to do simply by the nature of the disease and magnitude of the work that needs to be done. And so we do rely heavily on the strength of our partnerships with our different collaborators along the way.
Yeah, that kind of collaboration and community effort, even just getting everyone on the same page at the same time in the same room sometimes is challenging. So what is one of the most important things that you feel you've learned so far in your work?
Yeah, thanks. So we have mantras that we talk about at the Bill & Melinda Gates Medical Research Institute, and those are urgency, rigor, collaboration, innovation, and courage. I think I could probably pick out examples from each of those and spend an hour talking with you about them. But in the interest of time, I think one of the most important things I've learned is around the power of collaboration. You know, we don't have wet labs here at our offices in Kendall Square. Everything we do is by way of collaboration. And if you kind of zoom out to the meta level and look at our organization, you'll see we're a nonprofit medical research organization funded by one of the biggest philanthropies that ever existed, the Gates Foundation, and with funding from our other partners, the Wellcome Trust in the UK. We were established by one of the world's most successful capitalists, and we work towards reducing the burden of disease in low and middle income countries primarily. And as a nonprofit, we work with vendors and partners and the private sector and our commercial partners to drive the work forward across our pipeline and develop new products, new medicines, new vaccines in the framework of global access. And so that's just kind of an interesting setup. And when I had finished medical school, I was interested in going back into the global health space, and having had the experience in the public sector and doing some consulting with pharmaceutical companies while I was in med school, for me as a prospective employee, it just struck me as what a fascinating concept that this entity could play this role in this space at the intersection of the public and private sector. And so being here about 3.5 years now, I think one of the biggest takeaways that I've learned in the last few years is that the impact of the work that you can have is only as strong as the partnerships that you have and maintain and nurture. And as a collaborating organization, I see that play out every day, and I think is a really important lesson to keep in mind for trainees who are interested in doing global work. And, you know, and non-global work as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. I think collaboration is key no matter what you're working on. So you mentioned already briefly about the work you've been doing around the TB vaccine. Do you think this is one of the most pressing health concerns currently?
It is a huge pressing concern globally among many. There's almost 2 billion people worldwide today that are latently infected with TB. There are over 10 million new active TB cases every year and nearly 2 million deaths every year from TB. And this is a disease that I think archaeologists have found evidence of TB from human remains from 100,000 years ago. And this is a disease that we've known about, or at least has been around for a long time. And the BCG vaccine was developed a little over 100 years ago. But since then, there have been no vaccines. And so this is where some organizations, including our own, have started to work towards developing a novel TB vaccine for the prevention of disease. Now, about 5 years ago, the World Health Organization called for a novel TB vaccine with certain characteristics called preferred product characteristics that had a series of attributes, including the vaccine being an adult and adolescent TB vaccine for the prevention of disease. So prevention of conversion from latent to active disease, that also had a 50% or greater efficacy at prevention of conversion to active disease. And as I mentioned, there's a number of private companies and public sector entities that have been working towards developing vaccines, including ourselves. And we have two vaccines now in clinical trials. So we have one BCG revaccination program, which is for revaccinating adolescents with BCG. And we have our M72 AS01 vaccine, which is in partnership with GSK that we're developing. And we are about to start our phase 3 clinical trial that I mentioned. If any of these work, these have the potential to drive some pretty big, high-impact numbers in global health. There's some recent modeling showed that a TB vaccine for adolescents and adults that met the WHO's preferred product characteristics between 2025 and 2050 would avert up to 76 million new cases of TB. It would avert up to 8 million deaths and reduce antimicrobial resistance by preventing up to 42 million treatments and lead to global GDP gains of up to $3 trillion. So point me to another global health problem with that kind of impact where a vaccine could potentially avert all of those outcomes. And I think at the Gates MRI, what we're working towards is not just the clinical development of the asset with our partners, but also the access strategy and the regulatory strategy and how it's actually going to get to the market and the financial strategy. You know, what sort of financial architecture needs to be in place and market shaping architecture needs to be in place in order for such a final product to get to the places that need it. And it's an incredible privilege to have the chance to work with our team here on addressing these issues.
Yeah, thank you very much, Claire. I mean, this progress is definitely one of the most promising trends in global health. And so I wanted to ask, what are some of the biggest risks you see in global health at the moment?
Another great question. I think it is one of the promising trends. The pipeline for TB vaccines has improved dramatically in the last decade. And these vaccines, by the way, take decades to develop. Our M72 vaccine has been in development for over 30 years. What an incredible thing, right? It just requires really long-range thinking, these product development efforts. And the trend in the TB vaccine space is very exciting. And I think among other trends that I see as exciting and promising, including the shift in the global health architecture taking place now, the regionalization of efforts like the Africa Medicines Agency, for example, which is going to be hosted by Rwanda, the harmonization of regulatory strategies, the new incentives for vaccine manufacturing in low and middle income settings that are springing up, the market shaping tools that are being deployed to solve some of these problems, and new product development organizations. I would put us in the new category. Also organizations like ARPA-H that just came on the scene within the last couple of years in the US. As far as risks go, I think one of the biggest risks is just waiting too long to bake in these access considerations. If you don't take into consideration those activities that you'll need to complete over the course of a product's life cycle, you know, you might find yourself in a place where you have a nice scientific product that doesn't meet some XYZ characteristic or wasn't developed with the plan for license and registration, and certain studies weren't done or certain regulatory approaches weren't done, and you end up with avoidable delays to access. Or, you know, some financial tool wasn't deployed at the right time and you end up with those delays. And so I think there's a pretty big history of products that have been delayed through one reason or another. And I find that actually one of the most interesting historical perspectives to look at. And how can we learn from those delays so that we can bake in the right considerations for our products and going forward? And also learn from some of the lessons that have happened more recently. For example, I think COVID vaccine space, there's a lot of lessons to learn from that. So I would say, you know, amidst other major risks, we could spend all day talking about the risks in global health. And certainly in today's world, there are more risks than we can even fathom. But for our shop over here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, I think we are paying particular attention to making sure that we are considering future supply and future access and affordability issues from the earliest stage.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Claire, for sharing your insights and experiences with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you and truly inspiring listening to all of the work that you do. We really appreciate your time, given how busy you are.
Thank you, Sophie. Thank you so much to you and Tanner for having me on today, and just thrilled about the work that you're doing and excited to keep in touch. And it's been a pleasure to contribute. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Claire, for part one of our interview. And that's it for this episode of the AmBoss podcast. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Make sure to come back for the conclusion of our exciting interview with Dr. Claire in 2 weeks. For Sophie Neal, I'm Dr. Tanner Schrank, and this has been Beyond the Textbook.
The links in the description can give you a more in-depth understanding of these concepts. If
you like this episode, please give us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. You can check out the Amboss platform for your medical studies and sign up for a free 5-day trial at amboss.com.